The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Hello and welcome to the second in our live Tech Weekly events at Imperial College, the Tech City Talks. This series looks at an initiative announced last year by Prime Minister David Cameron. He pledged £200 million for technology and innovation centres around the country. Happy marriages of research and development aimed at bridging the gap between industry and university departments. One of the centres has become a monster, Tech City. The event announcement was held in a repurposed factory in the heart of Silicon Roundabout, the area of East London near Old Street, where grassroots movements of over 500 technology startups have planted roots since 2007. So, was the Prime Minister surfing a wave of techno-hype, or has his announcement propelled a groundswell? In tonight's talk, we're asking, how far has the government gone in its promise to build the digital entrepreneurship capital of Europe? Is there any meat on the Tech City skeleton, or is this a new age Cool Britannia led by UK web pioneers from the last decade of web innovation? Joining the debate are big thinkers, policymakers, and the people on the ground, as well as the Tech Weekly audience and listeners. So polite. We're joined by three eminent panelists. The first is Tara Salisbury, a digital media and creative industries consultant. Tara was at Wired Sussex, which is where I first met her several years ago, which was instrumental in developing the successful technology cluster in Brighton. And now, Tara, you were at Wired Sussex for 5 years. And over that space, what would you say is the greatest thing that you learnt about helping get the Brighton technology scene up and running?
I think the biggest thing I learned really was that kind of businesses are as individual as the people who run them. And so one of the things that you have to really be kind of aware of when you start working with the businesses is that they all have particular ways of doing things, particularly in the creative sector. People form businesses that are reflections of themselves. And so getting to know the people who run those businesses, getting to know their businesses is absolutely key if you want to actually make do anything impactful to help them.
And who would you say is the biggest success out of those people that you helped to launch or set up, really?
That's kind of hard because I think there were successes in different ways. I mean, there were companies which maybe creatively were successful but might not have gone on to, you know, get millions of pounds or whatever, but basically have won lots of BAFTAs. I can think of a couple of companies like that who fulfilled their creative ambitions. I think some of the kind of, as a cluster, we were very proud of the how the games companies developed in that cluster. And in fact, when I originally started, there were some games companies, but actually the cluster was predominantly led by e-learning companies, which still exist. But it was actually the games companies that really kind of drove the cluster and kind of gave it more prominence, simply because they were able to turn up and choose Brighton as their home, and that's what they did. They actually came and they chose to locate to Brighton, and we're very pleased about that.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the games companies and also specialization within the innovation industries. But we're also very pleased to welcome on the panel Eric Pickles, who's the Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government. Welcome, Eric.
Now, earlier, nice to be here.
Earlier this year, the government announced their plans for a number of enterprise zones, which are, and I'll quote you, designed to boost local growth and create over 30,000 new jobs by 2015. What do you consider when looking at enterprise zones to be the vital elements for the success of a centre for innovation?
Well, there are basically three elements that make up. There's tax discount, which you obviously understand. There's the availability of superfast broadband. But there's also a thing called local development order, which is a simplified planning regime. And we were really keen to get these things going because the last enterprise zones really were about, not intentionally, but by circumstance, became a process of disbursement. So you were actually moving jobs around the country, and it just basically ended up with sort of Spud's warehouse amazingly interesting gadgets R Us, and it was replicated around the country. So you can actually set something up around a specific industry to make it easier for that industry to come in. So those were the three essential elements, but we really wanted them to be in places within an economic area that would start chucking things along outside. And the thing that's really pleased me about them is those who weren't successful, we've done, I think, 21, 22 enterprise zones. It's actually relatively easy for a local authority to set the equivalent of an enterprise zone light. We can produce just about everything with exception of the tax discounts. But you'll be able to do that after Christmas. That power will be with local authorities.
I love this idea of enterprise zones in a box that you can just distribute to areas that potentially need a boost. Looking back, I'm curious about what you would say is one of the best political initiatives within the UK for creating the success in these innovation clusters.
Well, a political initiative is generally an oxymoron so far as progress is concerned. And I think you need to get yourself into a presence of mind of understanding that no single thing ever does it. There's no magic bullet, this process. You've got to just create the right kind of environment in terms of tax, in terms of planning, in terms of availability of buildings, in terms of rent, for people to be able to do the thing that they want to do, which is to innovate, to offer something different, to be able to pursue their idea and actually to feed off others. That's the thing that government can do. Generally speaking, government does mess things up, and it's just really trying to minimise that government messing.
Well, completing our lineup this evening is Alex Deschamps-Sorino, who is part of Rig London, which is a group of entrepreneurs, designers, who create interesting things within primarily the Old Street Silicon Roundabout district. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you.
Why did you set up in East London?
Well, I set up about 5 years ago a design studio that I then closed last year called Tinker. And it was first set up in my apartment in Hackney Central, and then we moved to Bethnal Green when I could employ someone, and grew from one to two desks to three desks in Bethnal Green. Thought that we, you know, were too big for the basement of a refurbished factory in Bethnal Green, and moved around Caledonian Road, actually quite close to King's Cross and the Guardian. It was a little too isolated, and I actually wasted quite a lot of time commuting to meetings. And so eventually we came back to Shoreditch. We're in a building that we like to call shit office, excuse my French, which was a building that was about to be demolished and terribly just wasn't being taken care of, but rent was very, very cheap. Eventually we got kicked out of that office, and I dissolved the studio and joined Rig, which is in Screddon Street, so very much in the heart of the quote-unquote Silicon Roundabout, and have been there for 2 years now.
What's interesting about so many of the companies in East London is the very nature of their startup status. They are teeny. They are, you know, one to two people, upwards of 10 people, and so that creates a really interesting and dynamic space to work. But at the same time, what's interesting about any kind of government intervention is that often they're focused on SMEs that go 25 to 50, up to 200 people. So this Tech City initiative, how does it sit within your awareness and your understanding of the startup community in East London?
Well, I think it's really interesting because it tries to tie an idea that's quite traditional in government of what an SME is, which is usually a kind of, you know, 10 to 50. I think an SME can go up to 100, which for anyone on the ground running a business, 100 people is huge. 100 people to manage is even 20 to 30 people has started to become less of a startup and more of a proper company. And the types of problems you encounter when you're quite small are very different than the types of problems you encounter when you're 70 people. Ability to find credit for banks to lend you any kind of money, and ability for you to understand the financial wheels and cogs that will get you through year 1, 2, 3, and 4 are really very different when you're that small. And I think that so far from what I've seen and heard, I think Tech City needs to sort of be able to glue those two things together, and I'm not quite seeing that.
Tech City, the concept, has been around for a year, but many are quite vague about what it actually is. I would like to take some time then to really get to the bottom of what it is, what it's based on, and why exactly the UK government is interested in this space. Eric, I'll start with you. What is Tech City?
Well, Tech City is three or four sites around London and around the rest of the country. And what we're trying to do is to have centres whereby people with ideas on technology can feed off other people. I think we don't really, the government's really good at setting up silos. In fact, the government is an enormous silo. But what we really want to do is to, well, in terms of a cliche, dare to share. We want people to be able to feed off one another in terms of the thing that's best, which is innovation and different ideas. But the stuff, you know, going around the roundabout or on Greenwich's peninsula, or stuff that's going in the docks and stuff we'd like to see in the Olympic sites around the media centre, offers a way in which we can start to move out from relatively small. But I think it's kind of important for us not to get overcome with thinking that the digital is the message. It's just the medium to deliver something. And I mean, clearly what government wants is to try and get out of the way and let this creativity go. Now, it can try and ensure that the broadband's there. It can kind of ensure that people can move into units. It can maybe offer deals in terms of incubation units to allow people to just to start. I mean, if we start moving across to 100 people employed, I think that's long gone of an SME. But just to give that process so that people's creative energy isn't going into worrying about the taxation, worrying about whether they're going to be able to pay for the rent, worrying about whether the facilities are going to be there. Government's job is to try and create these things. And I think we've been quite surprised how quickly it's taken off.
It has, and in many ways it's been because it's supported a kind of an idea, a zeitgeist at the moment in terms of this notion that there is potentially a new bubble happening around technology. And I wonder to what extent, and I'd love to hear your comments on this, Tech City, the phrase, is simply a brand that will attract investment to come into the country? Or is government actually looking to invest in the companies themselves, the startups themselves on the ground? What is the balance there?
No, of course, we're not looking to invest in the directly into that. So that would be, I think, the kiss of death to innovation. But I think the really exciting stuff is what comes next. And what comes next, I think, is to try and see different cities joining up globally on this, and for us to kind of marry with stuff that's happening in the States, marry with stuff that's happening in Europe, and most important of all, marry it with stuff that's happening in the Indian subcontinent and beyond. That's the real kind of, I see, and just to give our folks a slight edge. But I think the really exciting stuff in digital economy is when it starts to move beyond the roundabout, and where the roundabout in themselves can be quite a significant player on the world stage with similar kind of hubs all over the country and all over the world.
Now, it isn't actually one of the announced enterprise zones, so there's no sort of need for government to promise reduced business taxes or ease planning restrictions. But why not make it so? Why not offer those?
Do it. I mean, there's this enterprise zone light. Talk to the local enterprise partnership and local council. It can be done. And if it wanted to do, I've got lots of very clever people within my department that would help set up the local development order pretty quickly.
I'd like to jump out to Eric Vanderclay, who is, and he's got a lovely title, he's Entrepreneur in Residence with UK Trade and Investment and the CEO of Tech City, the Tech City Investment Organization. So basically, you're the man in charge of Tech City, Eric. Why East London? Silicon Roundabout, it was already there. You know, ultimately, we could argue that, the government is piggybacking on an existing grassroots center and saying, look at us, look at what we've created. So tell me a little bit more about how all of these different areas are connected and, in fact, what the Tech City umbrella actually means.
Sure. So I think it's true to say that the government did recognize that there was significant natural organic growth taking place in the area affectionately known as Silicon Roundabout. And it did decide to put some effort into helping to accelerate that sustainably while hopefully staying out of the way. And the results of that, from when the Prime Minister made the announcement about the Tech City Initiative through to today, is that in less than a year, the size of the cluster has almost doubled. So there are nearly twice as many businesses going from just under 200 to over 500. So that's the reason. Against the backdrop of a significant, economically challenging time, you have the kernel of significant growth in a sector that can provide you this magic ingredient called low capital intensive growth. And what Eric Pickles quite rightly said is that our objective now is to turn the success of the Tech City cluster to help raise the game for the rest of the country and, in fact, the rest of our trading partners.
We've mentioned Silicon Roundabout several occasions, and I myself am guilty of that. Alex, I'd like to ask you, for someone who is not based in London, for someone, say, I don't know, somebody in Leeds or somebody in Edinburgh or somebody in Cardiff, what is Silicon Roundabout? What does it mean to you?
Silicon Roundabout as an expression was created in my apartment because at the time my boyfriend was Matt Bidolf. And it was funny because it was a reflection of a small community of entrepreneurs who knew each other, who were friends, who were using Twitter before a larger group of people were using it. And it became something that snowballed very, very quickly, even after Matt had stopped using it, had moved to Berlin as his business was acquired by Nokia. People still used it as a nice way to say Shoreditch, a nice way to say Old Street, a nice way to say East London. That felt a little bit more techie, that felt a little bit more English. And so it makes the flavor of a technology cluster feel quite local and feel quite quite unique. So I think that's what it meant.
Well, who pre-Tech City, pre the announcement, was already there? And how has that changed? Not necessarily naming names, but, you know, the kind
there were
of the
quite
types
a lot
of
businesses. A lot of people, I think, in the quote-unquote more traditional creative industries, people in advertising, people in music, post-production, fashion. There's a lot of really fantastic fashion houses around there. House of Holland, for example, is just around the corner. We see Henry Holland down the street quite a lot. And then businesses like Last.fm, like Doppler, like Moo. Moo, who also became a cluster in themselves because they housed a lot of smaller businesses by offering them cheap desks. So that's who that was. And I think that's, yes, there were probably more than the 12 people on the map. But, you know, I think that grew definitely.
As Eric Vanderclay mentioned, there has been some substantial growth in the past year. How much of that would you say is down to the initiative, and how much of it would you say is down to just a gravitational pull based upon the quality of businesses and the quality of entrepreneurs who were there?
I think the best thing to think about is what were we looking at before that expression was invented? Who were we counting as being part of the cluster? Because I don't think that any of the wired maps or any of the initial maps were necessarily counting people who were not in technology. And I'd be curious to see when we say that there's a growth of however many percent, who is tech, who is creative industries, who is, you know, related services, schools, etc.
Tara, what do you think, as somebody who's represented Sussex in general, What do you think about the attention that's going to East London? There's clusters all over the country. I mean, Cambridge is, you know, known as Silicon Fen, for example. You know, you've got different areas. So why, you know, how do you feel about all the hype that's hitting London?
I think my loyalties are divided at this point because as a born and bred Londoner who used to also work in East London, I'm really happy and I'm pleased because I worked in around Shoreditch in Hoxton in 2000, was there when kind of everything crashed first time, and was, I'm just glad that things have picked up and everyone's done so well and that it's, you know, continued to develop. So I donn't have a problem with that. I mean, I think in terms of my Brighton hat on, my Sussex hat, I mean, the cluster is predominantly in Brighton. There are smaller clusters in Hastings and around abouts, but mainly in Brighton. I don't think people in Brighton have anything to fear. I think those two communities have always managed to bump along. People are in Brighton for very particular reasons. A lot of the businesses in Brighton are there because people love the lifestyle. They don't want to live in London, they want to live in Brighton. The people who work with them don't want to live in London, they want to live in Brighton. Brighton actually has one of the highest student retention rates in the country, if not the highest. People stay even when there aren't the jobs they might want to have because they want to live in Brighton. So I don't think it's a problem. I think the more hubs we have, the better, certainly on the global stage.
Jumping back out to Eric Vanderclay, I'm curious about what Tech City London is based upon. Is it based on other clusters? Which templates have you used for this?
Firstly, actually, I'd like to say something about Brighton, because I don't know if you know this, but Wired Sussex actually was the organisation that seeded my own company right back in nearly 10 years ago and actually sponsored that first exhibition that I ever exhibited at. And that was the journey that ended up with the creation of my own business, which was, by the way, you should use as a case study. It's done very well. So I'm very, very, very grateful for that help. And the lessons that I learned in Sussex are the same things that I've brought to Tech City now, which really goes to answer the question that you asked, Alex, which is, what is Tech City now? It is probably best described as the fastest growing tech and digital cluster in Europe. I think that's definitely now agreed that that's the case. But it is something that happened without the government directly intervening to make it happen. It just is that the government has put in place a few policy changes to specifically encourage entrepreneurship and innovation, but not just for London. It is for the whole of the country, and that's the point. So what it is, it's the fastest growing technology and digital cluster in Europe, and it's the place that I think that if you're a non-UK business, that it's the place in the UK that your business is, one of the places that it's most likely to succeed.
Eric Pickles, what are you hoping will come out of Tech City? Are you looking for the next Google or Facebook?
Yeah, well, there's some romance about this. Consider the East London, which was kind of the powerhouse of Victorian England. And over the past few decades, it's just been in a gradual decline. But to have East London associated with success, associated with the growth industry, associated with innovation, this is something that's pretty good. And that's why, you know, in terms of the immediate clusters around around London, from Greenwich all the way up to the Olympic site, that's why we're very pleased. What comes out of this? Well, I don't think we know.
Well, it would be nice if it was a Google or a Facebook.
It would be just lovely if it was like a Google or Twitter or something. But the great thing about this is if we can try and get people out of the silos, if we can get people to start sharing stuff, if we can start, rather than just having an approach with regard to you know, one particular industry, then, well, you know, the possibilities are limitless. But it's to create that feeling of innovation and freedom to share. That's something that we're very keen on.
There's a tweet here from Mark Bradbury with regards actually to the tax breaks that we mentioned briefly before. He says, in clean tech and energy sector, tax incentives are no real incentive if your planning application gets stuck in the system for years.
I mean, that's very true. Our planning system is pretty slow. That's why the the local development order, sounds very boring, is so useful because you can get some pretty quick planning decisions on the basis of a specific industry.
I'd like to pick some of this apart now, actually, starting with taxes, but ultimately, I suppose, looking a bit further, looking at a shopping list of what needs to go into a cluster. So, you know, we've heard what the hopes are for Tech City, but how do we get there? What do we need to create the conditions that will stimulate innovation and enterprise? So back in the dot-com era, when East London was starting to electrify with digital possibility, it was full of Nathan Barley's and cheap eats. Now, of course, Shoreditch and Old Street still overflow with hipsters and skinny jeans, but there are signs that its price tags are on the rise. Alex, you are the mayor of Tech City. What do you do, and what would you do?
God. I think that one of the things I've come to realize because of the way in which the cluster or that area kind of works is I think there needs to be a recognition of what is a small local business regardless of industry, and for some kind of help to be provided, whether it's tax breaks or otherwise, because I see a lot of potential for those small businesses to be cannibalized by larger, let's say, American companies coming in to set up, having the money to take over quite a lot of real estate, and for real estate prices to just go through the roof. We're now seeing right next to Shoreditch High Street the setup of something called Box Park, which is a shopping mall based on containers, and pretty much full of foreign companies and companies that aren't local and that aren't local brands. And Shoreditch is full of really small, cute shops and cute businesses that will suffer from that, that will suffer from the fact that, you know, Nike is suddenly has a presence. And so some kind of recognition that a local business needs to still coexist with those larger players, and for that to be reflected, whether it's in business rates or VAT, I think would be one of the first things I would try to do.
Eric Pickles, keeping things local in Shoreditch, how will you deliver that? And ultimately, should the Tech City proposition be centralized, or should it be devolved to local government?
It should be devolved. And it should be devolved beyond local government to local communities. But if you were going to ask me the same question, what would I do as a mayor? And you're speaking to someone's ex-city boss. It goes back to that tweet, quick decisions, don't mess about. What business wants to know is it yes or is it no? And I think it's also a kind of an attitude of mine. I've been watching with great interest the kind of rollout of broadband. And by and large, local authorities kind of fall into one or two categories. There's one that says, this is fantastic for my local area. This is going to bring in serious business. Let's start digging the road. Let's start putting up the boxes. But there are others who just see the possibility of broadband as a kind of a cash cow, which says, I'm going to charge you quite a lot to dig up the road. I'm going to charge you quite a lot for those boxes. And I think we're beginning to enter into a world where the people surprising broadband are going to say, well, that's all very interesting, but I'm going to be prepared to go to a place where they're going to let us in reasonably quickly. I think we're going to see a kind of market existing. But if you're not prepared to make decisions, if you want to everything has to be by process. We just love process. We love decisions. We love committees. If the mayor or the equivalent of the mayor, the leader, or the chairman, or whatever, is just interested in process and not grasping the importance, then Silicon Roundabout will die and something will grow up somewhere in another part of the country.
But what Alex, I think, is arguing is the locality, the local feeling of the environment, of the community, is something that really does serve to create this innovation, to create these enterprises that are coming out.
Then that has to be local, doesn't it?
So how would you do that?
If you're relying on me to do it, then we've already lost, haven't we? It's something that local people have to be able to produce together. But I don't think Secretary of State can sort of be able to plan to ensure that a particular area of London is still she and really good. I mean, it's been several decades before I could get in, since I've been able to get into skinny jeans, so I'm not really with that thought. But I mean, there is a limit to government. There is a limit to government. All it can do is create the circumstances that are not going to hold back these businesses.
Tara, I'd like to take a look at something that has actually worked, which is Brighton, mm-hmm. and look at how it really has flourished over the past 10 years. How has this happened? Is it the fact that it's got a geographical area that can be walked, you know, in half an hour? Is there something to be said for creating almost a walled garden around certain parts of London to create this kind of cluster? Or what are some of the other things that have worked in Brighton?
I think interestingly, geographically, yes, in one degree, that sense of community and things being local is one of the reasons that people like Brighton and like working in Brighton. Actually, it also is a problem because it's limited the amount of available office space. And architecturally, the way that Brighton is set up, it is lots of small buildings, etc. And obviously, when businesses start to grow, they outgrow these buildings, and there is little space for them to move into, or the space that's available isn't necessarily up to professional standards they would like as they grow. So it's good and bad. I mean, it's interesting because one of the things when I was director of projects, I was always quite amazed by was, even though companies can be very close by in terms of being in the same neighbourhood, being in the same street, they don't necessarily know each other. So, you know, that doesn't always make a huge difference. You know, being able to get to work easily makes a big difference. So people like to be able to walk to work, which you can do in Brighton, or take a bus or bike or whatever you want. So that makes a difference. The fact that Brighton geographically is obviously sandwiched between the sea and the Downs means that in terms of expanding, it's restricted. And again, that's kind of kept the city and it's kind of the way it is, has kept it and kind of preserved it in a nice way. It hasn't just sprawled out and kind of become endless suburbs, as you could argue London has.
I suppose what you could also argue about London, though, is that it has its own little clusters of specialisation. So
yeah.
It has, you know, in Soho, it has the digital media organizations mm-hmm. that contribute to the digital media sector or to the media sector. You know, whether it's in Shoreditch and East London, the sort of sexy side of digital media, which is often the creative industries and advertising mm-hmm. and fashion. And then out, potentially, whatever is going to be coming out of the Olympic Park, whether that is the big business and the infrastructure. So there are benefits, Tara, to specialization, would you say?
Yes, I mean, I think there is. I guess where Brighton has the edge in that sense is that you can have a lot of very diverse companies in a small space. So you don't have, the villages that maybe you get in London are all kind of concentrated in a smaller space, which is great for collaboration, and that definitely works.
I think it's also, just not to interrupt or anything, but I think that diversity is really important. We're just launching a project that uses rapid prototyping that's literally down the street from us, packaging from somewhere in the Midlands, I think, because I couldn't find something local. And I'm organizing a 600-person conference for in a week and a half, where I have specifically tried to get all the catering in London, all the facilities, the printing. We're printing with Moo. We're printing T-shirts at Indigo Clothing, who are in Shoreditch, because I'm concerned with, you know, feeding the local area in that way. But I didn't even have to think about where those businesses might be, because I knew they'd be around, they'd kind of be there. And so the idea that the clusters necessarily are necessary, the infrastructure's on one side of the city, and, you know, in the way that the BBC's on one side of the city, and then post-productions in Soho, and then maybe advertising somewhere between Clerkenwell and Shoreditch, I think that will break. I think everybody will kind of create micro-clusters and micro-clusters of diversity, because you just have to.
I think one of the, you mentioned one of the fears associated with Tech City, Alex, which was this idea of the big companies coming in and perhaps buying up or poaching the best people from the area. Now, Tara, there is there's some experience of that in Brighton. I know that Disney, for example, came in and mm-hmm. bought up several of the smaller games companies, which was great for a couple of years, and now they've shut them all down. Yeah. So, you know, this is a reality of these types of clusters. How likely do you think that is, Tara, to happen in Tech City?
I mean, I think it's definitely, I would definitely put it down there as a threat, because I think the argument is, isn't there, that you, whilst you've got the government supporting, putting money into an area, then it can become attractive. But unlike companies like Alex's, which maybe have history in the area, they don't have reasons to be there other than there's a ready availability of labour and or office space. And if that doesn't seem so lucrative to them, then maybe they will leave, and like you say, leave a big gap behind them. I think that you know, that's why it's really important to create a kind of full or support a full ecosystem of companies. That's what I was going to say. That you need a proper ecosystem, and you mustn't squash the lower level by adding too heavy a top level.
Looking from my perspective, kind of looking in from the outside, it's what happens next. And given the nature of digital technology, you know, sort of a more sophisticated kind of cloud basis is how these clusters then start to talk to one another and to collaborate extra cluster outside the cluster, and not just in this country but throughout the rest of the world. So all these sort of being about, you know, well, we don't like the neighbourhood now, and it's not possible to get that nice little sort of cappuccino around the corner, and there's a pretty Starbucks there. Actually, I couldn't care less about it, if I'm entirely honest, because I think it's getting in the way of what's going to happen. I'm sure Disney are going to come in and do some stuff that you don't entirely like, but there'll be some innovation that will replace that, and you know, you'll get feed off from other parts of the world. I think we've got to kind of understand that this is, it's kind of, we're getting closer time to kind of break out of the clusters.
But the danger, though, with for example, the Disney example, is that you've suddenly got a whole bunch of people who are redundant. You know, and they can't get work because of the austere situation that we're in with the economy. So what measures do you put into place?
Well, it kind of takes the subtext of this, which is you build it, they will come. I mean, the process of what we're trying to do in Tech City, that the help the government is kind of offering, is it's there to allow innovation to come. Once you get yourself into a position where you think the government's going to provide it, then we're in kind of trouble. Now, I'm just about to announce a whole lot of projects under this Growing Places, and the idea is to go back to what folks were saying earlier about being able to make that little bit of difference, being able to get to work early. There's a whole load of stuff which is below below regional kind of infrastructure projects and logistic projects, that just with a use of a few million quid, you can actually release a whole lot of growth, and we'll certainly be looking around East London to do that.
I'd like to take a sidestep now and ask Elizabeth Barley, who is one of the co-founders of Tech Hub, which is an innovation center that is based in Tech City. Just on Silicon Roundabout. Now, Elizabeth, it's kind of a broad question, but based upon how close you are to the pulse of what's happening in that area, would you say that we are in the midst of a new bubble?
I think it's a really interesting question. A lot of people have been asking that, I think, because of what they're seeing in the US on the West Coast. I don't think that in London we're in a bubble. I think what we're seeing is a re-energization of the technology startup sector, and one that's well due and very welcome. I think the difference between a bubble and what we're seeing now is the issue of sustainability. We're not seeing investors throwing money at crazy ideas and not expecting a great business plan behind it. What we're seeing is considered investment in some really interesting new innovations.
What we are seeing is 500 technology startups coming into quite a small space in quite a short period of time. There is going to be a lot of sloughing off of ideas that may feel good right now, but next year they may not. So to that extent, I mean, what types of businesses do you think are going to succeed and not, Elizabeth?
Well, I think with startup businesses, with small businesses, there's always going to be what you call the sloughing off of ideas that don't work, and that's healthy. That helps us avoid a bubble. We don't want to be trying to sustain businesses that aren't going to work. I think those businesses that have revenue generation as a core part of their business plan right from the beginning and articulate that very clearly in terms of how they're going to move forward are the ones that are going to win out. Those that have a great idea and the ability to get a lot of people behind it but not necessarily have worked out how to make money from that, I think they're the businesses that we're not going to see loads of money being thrown at. I think maybe they're going to be the ones that aren't going to keep continuing. And I think your comment about big companies coming in and buying up these small companies and then making people redundant and in financially austere times, what's going to happen then? Those sorts of things can drive innovation. The fact that we're seeing this incredible resurgence of the startup scene, I think, is in part a response to the economic situation. If you don't have a job, make yourself one.
The incredible influx of these small companies, Alex, must be having an effect on the culture of this area. And in fact, looking at the amount of activity that has been focused around Tech City for the past year, and you commented on your blog, I think something that's quite acute and accurate, is activity has diminished over the summer as London snoozed. I'm curious if it will pick up again or if we're kind of collectively over it. It's been a couple of months now since August, which is when everybody was snoozing, and now it is in the run-up to the Tech City announcement, so there's a whole bunch of things that are going on around Tech City. But after November 4th, what do you think will happen? Do you think that this excitement around the technology space will sustain?
Well, I think the excitement is fueled by who succeeds and who is seen to succeed. And I will disagree with Elizabeth a little bit about what types of businesses end up being pushed forward because, for example, my very good friend Usman Haq just sold his business Patchbay to LogMeIn, a U.S. company, with almost no business plan. And I think that enthusiasm is what people look for when they want to see a sign of success. Activity, press, media, et cetera, is one thing, but I think being able to see, you know, in the ways that we saw early on that Last.fm was acquired, people go, okay, cool, great, then, you know, even if we're here, we can find investors, even if most of the time the investors aren't local. I think, you know, there's energy there from those successes.
Well, what then would you say is a measure of the success of Tech City? A whole bunch of people with great ideas that didn't quite manage to raise the angel funding to support themselves?
I'd be really very cheesed off if there wasn't a significant number of people who are doing that. But we also want to see people who are making a success of their businesses, who are able to be able to sell to some American corporation with a business plan. That'd be really cool.
I'd like now to open up the questions to the floor. Please do not feel shy, but do wait for the microphone. Otherwise, we won't be able to actually hear you. So if anybody does have any questions for the panel or for one another, if perhaps you know one another, then by all means, raise your hands in the air and swing them around like you don't care.
Catherine Griffiths from Imperial College, Innovation and Entrepreneurship Group. We focused really on tech cities, but not tech rural. And I just wonder if any of the panel would like to comment if someone, say, in Somerset or Hereford, really quite desperately different environments, how would you go about setting up what you've managed to achieve, say, in London and in some of the other areas, urban areas, really, and down in Sussex? So.
I think it comes down to community and... I'm at the moment in the process of reading the Richard Florida book, Rise of the Creative Class, and I think the idea that you can do everything remotely will get you through the first year. I think then the ability to actually meet up with people quite frequently, go to meetups, actually go where you will be able to find advice on, you know, off the cuff, have good conversations, create relationships with potential clients, requires you perhaps to do a lot of commuting eventually. A good friend of mine runs a games company in the Midlands and ends up having to come to meetings every week to London because his clients are there. And so where if your clients are local and your business is local and your business plan just requires you to have that local ecology, then that's fantastic. If you're trying to build the next Twitter or Facebook, then your community becomes larger, and how you're going to get people to sign up to your service and to kind of pay attention requires you to have a link to these bigger, larger communities in some way. You don't have to live there, but it certainly helps to be able to meet them and for them to kind of know about you in real life.
Eric Pickles, do you have any comments on that, looking at your experiences with enterprise zones and innovation clusters?
I mean, I can think of a number of innovation clusters that, that operate in Herefordshire, Gloucester, one operating in Scunthorpe, an unlikely spot. It's generally come about largely by a process of serendipity. But I think it's the next phase. We've just been talking about the limitations that you just need to come and share the coffee with various people. Well, I kind of think the next level, when we properly start to roll this out across country, across the globe, that maybe that face-to-face isn't going to be as necessary as it currently is now. I think, yeah, that the points are very valid for how we are now, but maybe how we are 5 years from now, I'm not so sure. So I think it is going to be possible, providing a decent broadband run, to be able to operate in the middle of Lincolnshire.
Can I just add quickly? When I first started at Wired Sussex, it was a tail end of what I would consider probably quite a big failure, which was a project to roll out the Wired Sussex model across the southeast. And there were five other regions where this took place. I think it was Berkshire, Wessex, Oxford, Surrey, and the other one escapes me. And essentially, what the finding of that after quite a lot of money had been spent and the model was tried to replicate was that where there was already a cluster, where organically there had already been a cluster of sorts, it worked. Where there wasn't a cluster, there was just a handful of companies who thought it might be interesting to link them up. Once the money dried up, so did the cluster.
Well, thank you all very much for joining us. I'm afraid that that's all the time that we have for this evening. I'd like to thank our panelists, Eric Pickles, Alex Deschamps-Soncino, who I'm very sorry I mispronounced your name at the beginning, and Tara Salisbury. On next week's Tech Weekly Tech City Talk, we're debating the current intellectual property infrastructure. What must government do to support the creative digital industries in this age of shifting attitudes towards ownership? I'm Alex Kratosky, and the producer was Scott Cawley. Thank you very much to our audience and to our panel. Good night.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a 1 month, no commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.